What else do we have in common? We're both bold.
Yep.
So we are both bold. We both work for the BBC. And we are in the Bloomin' Bleep Cancer Club together, which also spells out BBC.
Oh, wow.
Laura Rawlings and Pat Hart's Bloomin' Bleep Cancer Podcast.
Hello, Pat. This is completely random, isn't it, what we're doing now?
Hey, Laura. It is random, but do you know what? I feel it's therapeutic, so let's go for it.
We'll continue, shall we? So the thing is, as most of our friends know, the two of us absolutely love radio or audio, whatever you want to call it. We like listening to the radio. We like making it. We like presenting on it, and we miss that. And we miss it because we've been dealing with some... Well, I've been dealing with a significant health challenge, and I know you've had your moments with yours as well, and in a different role in radio now. So we just messaged each other and just said, "Shall we just start talking and press record and see where we end up?"
I was talking to my wife, and I said, "Cher, guess what? Laura Rawlings and I are going to do. We're just going to do something. We're not quite sure, but it will be like a little podcast thing, just to talk about our challenges." And she was so excited.
Aww.
That we were going to do it, because I think maybe like me, yeah, she feels talking is important. And sometimes you don't want to talk to your kids, and sometimes you don't actually want to, I'm not saying you don't want to talk to your other halves, but talking to different people gives a different perspective because you can kind of say what you want. I'm not saying people don't know you, but you can say what you want to different people.
It's true.
You know, so I'm pleased.
Ah, and you did actually get your wife to come on screen so I could see her, which is always amazing and a joy for me. And I'm taken back to being 9 or 10 years old and watching telly about that all the time. Pat, so shall we set out a little bit of who we are? Because there will be people who've never heard of either of us, and that's absolutely fine. Because we're just like the people listening. So shall I ask you some questions about who you are? You can ask me a few, and then we'll share some of what we have in common. Okay, so Pat Hart, tell us, so who are you? What do you do? What do you say to people when they say, what are you doing these days?
Well, it's funny. I look at, say, right, on my social media, what do I do? What do I say? And I always just put broadcaster or something, you know, Pat Hart broadcaster, based in Bristol. Not originally from Bristol, from the Midlands, from East Midlands, Nottingham, as a youngster. Moved here when I was 13, hated it, got into fights, because I didn't understand the accent, but now it's my home, and I wouldn't, if I was living in this country, which I am, I wouldn't be anywhere else, I don't think, from, you know, than the Southwest and in Bristol. But a broadcaster, essentially. I've run community radio for a long time, a station called BCFM, and now I work for the beautiful, wonderful, glorious BBC.
And you are paid to say that now.
Yeah. Exactly, never before. Worked for the BBC and have gone through some health challenges, which I'll go through in a bit. And I know you from BBC as well. Being, some people are going to get really offended now, but it doesn't matter. Just say it as it is, Pat. Laura Rawlings, that's the one that whose show I want to go on. She gets it. She gets. We do our Caribbean cookery thing, and it's really difficult to find people that get you and can ask you the right questions, because sometimes people just read off a press release. So the fact that I'm doing this with you is great, because I think you get a lot more than many other kind of standard broadcasters. And I'm going to ask you why in a minute.
Okay, that's fine. There were so many things that just popped in my head then, and some of them are also probably not appropriate. But I was listening to you, I was also watching you, and I was thinking, what else do we have in common? We're both bold.
Yep.
So we are both bold. We both work for the BBC, and we are in the Bloomin' Bleep Cancer Club together, which also spells out BBC.
Oh, wow.
Do you see what I did there?
I love it.
Yeah.
That could be a name for a podcast, couldn't it?
Yes, it could be quite a sweary name for a podcast. It's not the worst idea we've ever had.
But we'd put the stars in there so that it wouldn't actually be sweary, wouldn't it?
That's true. And it's no reflection of the wonderful people that we work with at the BBC when we make a joke about BBC like that either. Okay, so broadcaster Pat Hart. So that's how I know you, as you say. We used to do little broadcasts together, BBC and community radio, didn't we? And That was marvellous. Yeah, we've done those days, and feels like a long time ago.
It does, but yeah, we've done St. Paul's Carnival together and stuff as well. But for you, it's almost like Laura Rawlins. You know, she's on local radio, but you've done so much more than just kind of being like, if you like, just a presenter is really important, because a presenter is a companion, you know, someone that breaks news. So sometimes when something's happened, you know where you were and you know who was on the radio when they told you that. But also just the amount of features and interviews and really serious topics that you've dealt with. And of course, both of us in our time will have dealt with stories when we interviewed people that have gone through cancer, or even others that have lost loved ones through cancer as well, haven't we?
I know. And I think about some of those interviews and I think, God, did I ask the right thing? Did I say something stupid? Did I treat it as sensitively as I should have done? Or did I just get the tone right? Whatever it was. Was I afraid of asking something? Or, yeah. I mean, the fear is that you put your foot in it in some sort of a way. But you can't haul yourself over the coals too much, because until you end up having certain experiences yourself, you just have no way of knowing what is okay to ask and what isn't. And also, everyone's different anyway. But yes, I too have reflected and thought, goodness, yeah, I've asked rather a lot of those people when they've come on the radio. They've always known what they're coming on there for, but did I go too far or what have you? So yeah, it's... the boot is on the other foot for both of us as we kind of sit here chatting. It's funny. I don't know if I think of myself as a broadcaster at the moment. And this is where I think our illness is different. But I got my diagnosis at the end of April, May. So it's not been a year. But in that time, I haven't been able to work. I've done the odd audio recording for BBC Radio Bristol, and that's it. But it's been quite intensive treatment. You know, I've had nearly 6 months of chemo, a couple of weeks to recover. And then I've had my boob off, my lymph nodes out, which are in your armpit, and then recovering from that. And as we record today, I'm about to start radiotherapy for 15 rounds of that, and then more chemotherapy. So it's funny. I don't know. When people say to me, what do you do? I'm like, I don't know. Not actually sure. I've sort of, my identity is over there in a pile of clothes on the floor. Not really. It's just sort of, it's over there. I'm kind of, but this me is dealing with breast cancer and stage 3, you know, in breast and lymph. And whilst it's early stage cancer, which sounds weird when you say stage 3,
I never got the whole stage thing, and it was kind
it's
of
bizarre, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and talking sometimes, I mean, you'll know this, Laura, is that sometimes when you're talking to the specialist, you've got a million and one questions, and you probably only ask 5, and
yeah,
I always used to go away from the meetings, and Sherry, my wife, would ask questions, she'd be taking notes, and I'd be kind of in a bit of a daze, really, and I don't quite know why, but they'll tell you stuff and they'll be very honest, but some of it just doesn't sink in, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'd hear things that I want to hear, and then my wife would be the one who was asking the questions, and that's not like me, because as I say, both of us, we're radio people, we're interviewers, we know how to ask the questions, but then when it's us, it's almost I just wanted to say, so how long have I got to live then? That's the question that was flicking into my head. And I'm thinking, I can't ask that question. Am I going to jinx myself? Am I going to ask a question where I don't want them to tell me the answer? You know, what's, when you say stage whatever, what do you mean? Does that mean it's terminal? Does that mean, you know, what can you do to help? Mm-hmm. There are just so many questions that... when you first get the diagnosis, I got mine on the phone. Can you believe?
No, and who? A consultant gave that to you on the phone?
Yeah, because they were checking my stomach for, I was having really bad stomach pains, and they didn't know what it was, and they found something, and they did a biopsy. So he said, look, you know, it's cancer, it's lymphoma, it's so-and-so, and told me what it was. I remember I was here at home, and I think Sherry was working on the table. I just burst into tears, and she looked at me. It was just this absolute emotion, thinking, what? It was, yeah, it was a really strange time. And then I had questions and I had to wait 4 weeks before I saw anybody to even ask them one question.
Crikey. And that's just torture. I mean, that's not even treatment. That is knowing you've got something, not knowing what any of it means and not having a plan.
No, absolutely. How did it happen for you in terms of your diagnosis?
So I found a lump in my armpit, went to the GP surgery, and they said, you've got to wait 3 weeks because it could be hormonal, and then we'll see about a referral if needs be. And I went back and the bloody lump was still there, got referred to the breast cancer clinic or breast clinic. And then during that wait for that was another couple of weeks. I then found another lump in my boob. And by the time I went to go and see the consultant, they had several people in the room already. And they had a feel and they said, without even doing an ultrasound or anything else, we're kind of 95% sure it's breast cancer. And, you know, they could say there and then it will be mastectomy, full lymph node clearance. And they kind of said exactly the treatment that I've ended up, more broadly speaking, the treatment I've ended up having. And he said, you need to stop work, stop what you're doing. I was juggling various different jobs, all part-time jobs. So that's what I had to do. And I had the biopsies and, you know, was upset while they were taking them, and they could see it was cancer. So I'd gone from zero, walking around like, you know, like everybody else, being someone who liked to think they looked after themselves, you know, eating healthy food, not smoking or drinking excessively, nothing, you know. Gone from zero to, and you've got this kind of cancer and it's just going to just turn your life upside down right now. And that was it. But at least I did see someone, you know, I did sit face to face with someone. I don't think I heard anything else in the rest of that conversation either. It's not unusual for me to hear the first line of whatever they say. And if it's huge, then to not be able to process or take on board anything
else. Were you on your own? Who were you with?
I'd taken my partner, thankfully. So he was in the room with me. So he heard the same thing I did, which I've needed someone to be there. And actually friends have come, journalist friends, you know, have come along. Like Ali Vowles has come with me, and I've been so grateful because she can write really fast and record and ask. I mean, I was about to say, and I will say, you know, but she came with me when I've had various ultrasounds and stuff, and she's like there almost with a recorder, seeing my boob and stroking my foot whilst they're doing it. Isn't that wonderful? You know, I feel so fortunate. So despite being a journalist and someone who asks questions, I've struggled to ask any questions about my own treatment, certainly for the first month, and certainly after diagnosis for a month. And then even when I started chemo, I really couldn't summon the courage or strength to ask anything, really.
Laura Rawlings and Pat Hart's Bloomin' Bleep Cancer Podcast.
For you, I mean, we spoke a little bit, and then we spoke off this recording as well. But for you, you know, those initial thoughts, so some of that C word, right? And mortality, everything you've got. You know, you're a parent. So am I. Is that, for me, it was almost the fear of, it wasn't even the fear of me, it was the fear of the other people. Soon as I heard that word, I feel a bit emotional just saying it now, is that there was just this massive fear, not what am I going to do, what will they do, which I suppose is a bit patronising for me in one way, but it's like, oh my God, my daughters, you know, my kids, probably hard to ask you, but the things that went through your mind, what was it like?
That's exactly it. And the one thing that gets me every single time was one, you know, my partner, and he's in earshot of this, but it, you know, he obviously needs me in his life, or I'd like to think he does, but I know he's also big enough and is an adult and sort of understands life differently. So somehow he'll find a way through it, right? He's found his way through other challenges. Whereas my daughter was four when I was diagnosed, she's now five. And about to start school, and she is the one thing, when I think of her, that is what crushes me. She's also a massive motivation. So as soon as I feel myself get sad, like now, I give myself an enormous kick up the bum and think, come on. But it's her. It's like I'm still at the stage where, you know, she loves mummy and daddy and she's not teenage phase, but she, you know, I've been a part of every single day of her life. I've shared a bed with her for nearly every day of her life. I mean, at times I've wanted her to hop out of it, but this is how it's worked out for us. Okay. So, you know, no judgment here, please. We're really close. This is the stage we're at in her life.
Yeah. And that's, I can't put it into words. I mean, I know what a cuddle from, you know, let's say India, a cuddle from India, it just, do you know what? It takes away every bit of horribleness and pain I've had for the whole day. She's come back from school and that innocent cuddle. I remember a couple of years ago when I was first diagnosed, and I've spoken to her since about it, but she said, Daddy, what's lymphoma? I said, beg your pardon? She said, I saw a leaflet by your bed. And she said,
she can read.
Yeah, I know there's something wrong. I can hear you and mum talking about it. And in the end, we made a decision just to say, look, let's speak to the children and explain what it is, explain what the treatment is. Because otherwise, someone's going to come up to them outside the school gates and go, so sorry to hear about your dad, or so sorry to hear about your mum, give them my love. And they're going to be going, what? So I felt they needed to understand. But you're absolutely right. Two things. One is strength. You know, our kids give us so much strength and so much reason to fight. But also from a selfish perspective, give us so much comfort and joy. It's quite a strange thing. And I'm sure I would feel the same way. But if I wasn't ill and I hadn't gone through this diagnosis, I do wonder. I just think to myself, do you know what? I think it's brought me even closer, I feel.
Well, there's just a huge appreciation. I mean, I don't know about you, but there's every time we just do something, I really appreciate it. I mean, I was quite good at doing that before. And it's not to put the pressure on the, oh, you must enjoy every single moment and never argue. But because obviously we still do. But I do feel great. Yeah, genuinely, I appreciate that. I know that I'm grateful. I feel that gratitude for it, and I do make the most of it. And that is a deliberate decision. And I can remember times, you know, when my life was very busy with other appointments and exciting excursions, you know, going off to different things in my radio life, that I didn't. You know, you're going from here to there to there to there to there to there, right? And it's wonderful and exciting, and I wouldn't change any of that. But you don't have as much time to appreciate it, and there are different demands, you know. Whereas when you're going through treatment and life is a lot quieter and a lot stiller, if I can't walk as fast, then I notice stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Literally and metaphorically.
Absolutely. And my attitude has been, and it's weird just even saying it, look, you know, having an illness that is life-threatening, life-limiting, it can be so many things. You look at what's around you, you savor it, you appreciate it, you do things. So for me, for example, both my parents are from India before it was partitioned. I've never been. I was born in Kuwait in the Middle East where they worked. And I said, Cher, I booked. She said, booked what? February. We're going to go to India. You know, and I'd never have done that before. And there's just this sense of I want to do as much as I can. But it's just, look, you know, live for the moment. Appreciate what we've got. Don't keep putting off stuff. And I think that's something that, because you will be the same. Over the last couple of years, we will have lost so many people that we thought were going to be there for a long time. There was a lady at BCFM who was a very close friend, a lady called Christina Rubino, who was absolutely amazing. She was just a force.
A force?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's funny. Yeah.
We said that at the same time.
Where are you, Christina?
And
but she was.
She was. And our studio downstairs is called the Christina Rubino Studio. And I just... I look at Sherry sometimes, I go, Sher, what would Christina have said? And I can't repeat some of the things she would have said. But we've lost so many people, and it changes your perspective, because you think, I need to tell this person. I'm also a lot calmer about stuff.
Yeah.
Because I think, do you know what? We're going through that S word, right? Ends with T, mm-hmm. four letters. We're going through it, and it's like, so nothing could be worse than maybe what we're going through. So actually, what you've just told me, let's put it into perspective. Let's be calm and put it into perspective. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I completely get that. And it's exactly the same for me. And it's probably irritating for my partner, because I'm frequently feeling, and I know it's annoying when people kind of used to say it to me before. One of my colleagues, who you know very well, would always say, oh, don't sweat the small stuff. And I'd be like, but we might not be on air in 5 minutes. Now I would still care about that if we were about to not be on air, but I would also not be running. I mean, I don't think I ran like a headless chicken, but I would be much calmer about it. But yeah, I think it's probably difficult sometimes for other people around you to sort of get that, because it's like you're not giving it the sense of urgency that they are feeling it deserves. But yeah, we don't need to sweat the small stuff, that's for sure. You know, you mentioned India. So is that, are you going there this February? Okay. That's amazing. So I can relate in that I have been thinking, and I also ended up listening to a podcast by a guy that I've interviewed before called Simon Squibb. And he was going around asking people, he's an entrepreneur, made loads of money, and he goes around asking people on Instagram what their dreams are. What is it you would do? And, you know, here I am brushing my teeth kind of in my daily battle. I was thinking, oh, what would I do? You know, and it's really obvious to me the things I would do, but often money is kind of like is one small factor. Yeah. And then I just thought, oh, actually, no, I can make it a little bit smaller, but I can also tell other people about the bigger things that I would like, because who knows how this stuff is going to work out one day, right? And so I've always been hesitant of, you know, scared of like business risk and spending money. And for ages, I have loved using saunas and little, you know, going cold swims and doing all that stuff. And I just thought, I've been thinking for several years now that I wanted to create a space like that, that people could come to and enjoy. And I just thought, why haven't I done it? And it's fear of losing the money and it not working out, and also not having all the money, but you know. And I just thought, I've just got to do it. It would give me enormous joy to see people come and use this space. Yes.
Hey.
Yeah. So my sister-in-law and I are kind of planning this. We're trying to find someone who can do it. We've had loads of lovely, funny little serendipitous moments with it. But she and I have been down this rabbit hole of thinking we'd like to do it for a year together. And I've been in that rabbit hole for much longer than that, just rattling around by myself. And so I just thought, right, you've actually just got to start lining up your ducks to make this happen. What money have you got? What could you put into it? How are you, you know, where is it going to be? Who's going to do it? Let's just make a start and we're going to sort it out. You know, a bigger dream of mine is that I would create a Penny Bron is amazing, but it's too far away from me. The Maggie's centres are amazing. They're too far away from me. And I think that really I'd need something a bit closer to where I am. And there isn't something. And I went on a walk 5K away against cancer, in case anyone's interested. They piggyback on park runs. And I went on one of those and got chatting to someone who was funded through Macmillan at the Great Western Hospital in Swindon. And I said about this, I was like, oh, there needs to be a cancer centre. And she said, I totally agree. It's my dream. And I was like, that's two of us who've got this dream. And I'm like, okay, I don't know where we're going with this or how you do it, but don't be afraid to say the stuff you want. If that's a message, you know, this is something we both clearly feel, isn't it? Ask for what you want, put it out there, see where it goes. Don't, you know, get on and book the trip to India is an easier thing, like as is trying to fund a sauna is an easier thing than trying to fund something that costs millions. But let's actually
you're right.
Do it.
No, you're so right. We've got these little routines. So when I go for my checks over at Southmead Hospital, Sherry will always come. Mm-hmm. And we're on our way back, probably this is nearly a year ago now, we're on our way back and we passed this camper van and I don't know how much it was. And she went, oh, should we have a look? I said, no, Sherry, it's too expensive. I said, there's a place near Weston-super-Mare that does them. Let's go and have a look. So we went and had a look, and we'd made this little pact that we were going to put X amount each in. I said, oh, I think I might have that hidden away somewhere, you know, under the mattress. But so we went and had a look, and I remember the fourth one, Sherry just sat in the lounge part and she said, Patty. And when she calls me Patty, I know. She went, it's like some out of Little Britain. I want that one. Right. And so I looked and I said, Cher, that's nearly twice as much as we said that we'd, you know, we'd put in. And we put a deposit down. I went and found the money. And so we've got a little camper van and we go out with the kids. And sometimes when I've had my chemo, I don't want to go anywhere. But because we're in the camper van, the kids, it's like these little overhead lockers. The kids have like going, right, that's daddy's. So all my bits and pieces in there. So even if they do go somewhere, I can say, I'm just staying in a camper van. It's got a loo. It's warm. Mm-hmm. It's got a telly. I can play music. I can have a sleep. It is absolutely perfect. And here's a double benefit. When we've gone to little festivals and things, we've been able to do the Caribbean food stuff using the camper van as a little... So it was kind of...
That's so good.
And I would never in a million years have ever thought about just getting a camper van. And it was literally coming from the hospital. And I thought, why not? You know, why not? We've not got any bad habits. You know, we're not heavy drinkers. We're not gamblers. We're not this, we're not that. You know, let's have fun. And the kids adore it. You know, the younger ones adore it.
I need to get those details from you, Pat. I think I need that same trip to Weston-super-Mare. I want to be making like Welsh cakes and brewing up in the kettle.
Come on, we'll have little stalls together. That will be amazing. I've realised there's so much to talk about. So maybe we'll have to do this in little bits, you know. Are they called podcasts, are they?
I believe so. I have no power in... Well, actually, no, that's not true. I do have power. We've got 40 seconds before we promised we would stop. Of course, we can put stuff out. We can do what we like with it, can't we?
Of course we can.
I know we both felt that there are just times that we've wanted people just to kind of understand that whatever they might experience is a shared experience, and just to kind of be going through life together, you know, with whoever's listening. And so I hope that's what we've done today.
I
certainly love listening to you.
Don't say that. And you too. And I just look, when we're going through stuff, and this is people that have suffered a bereavement, people that are going through cancer treatment, some people feel that they'll just send a text and say, hey, anything you need, give us a shout. And you know we're not going to give you a shout, but I'll tell you the thing that I've really appreciated is conversation. So actually anything I need is a chat. Just drop me a text and say, hey, do you want to chat? And whenever the time and place is, we'll go and talk. And I think that sometimes could be that medicine to help us, because we just, you know, we want to talk. We don't want you to forget about us and think, I better not talk to Laura because she's going through so much, and so I'll leave her. Because it can be lonely, can't it?
I say loneliness is one of the biggest things, actually. I filled my days with loneliness, certainly through chemotherapy. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll put a pin in that, as they say. It almost feels like an injection.
I've had injections today and cannulas. Don't. No, stop it.
No, we're not going to do that. No. I'm going to go and do my stretches so that I can get my arm above my head to get my bit zapped.
Do it.
And we'll do this again another time. Cool.
You're looking wonderful, by the way. I just need to tell you, so we can see each other, everyone, on the screens as we record this.
Yeah.
And Laura's got this beautiful kind of, I call it cerise. Is it a cerise jumper you've got?
I have got a beautiful cerise jumper and silvery. I've got a bit of hair regrowth, possibly half a millimetre head coverage. And all I can see is a silver bit on the top.
I had a fresh head shave.
It sometimes stays where you don't expect it and falls out in other places. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we can share those details another time. I'm going to press stop, Pat. You don't have to leave, but I'm going to press stop.
Laura Rawlings and Pat Hart's Bloomin' Cancer Podcast. More of the same next time.